50 hours of videotape, and that material was aired in brief form on ABC News and then became the basis of a feature-length documentary produced and directed by Tim and me called Restrepo. Many scenes in this book were captured on videotape, and wherever possible, I have used that tape to check the accuracy of my reporting. In print format, dialogue or statements that appear in double quotation marks were recorded directly on camera or in my notebook while the person was speaking or soon thereafter. Dialogue recalled by someone later is indicated by single quotation marks. Some scenes that I was not present for were entirely reconstructed from interviews and videotape. Many scenes in this book are personal in nature, and I have shared those sections with the men involved to make sure they are comfortable with what I wrote. I hired an independent fact-checker to help me combat the inevitable errors of journalism, and a bibliography of sources that were consulted appears at the back of the book. In many cases, I have shortened quotes from interviews and texts in order to ease the burden on the reader. Book 1. Fear. By cowardice, I do not mean fear. Cowardice is a label we reserve for something a man does. What passes through his mind is his own affair. Lord Moran, The Anatomy of Courage. New York City, 6 months later. O'Byrne is standing at the corner of 9th Avenue and 36th Street with a to-go cup in each hand and the hood of his sweatshirt pulled up. It's 6 in the morning and very cold. He's put on 20 pounds since I last saw him and could be a laborer waiting for the gate to open at the construction site across the street. Now that he's out of the army, I'm supposed to call him Brendan, but I'm finding that almost impossible to do. We shake hands and he gives me one of the coffees and we go to get my car. The gash across his forehead is mostly healed, though I can still see where the stitches were. One of his front teeth is chipped and looks like a fang. He had a rough time when he got back to Italy. In some ways, he was in more danger there than in combat. O'Byrne had been with Battle Company in the Korangal Valley, a small but extraordinarily violent slit in the foothills of the Hindu Kush Mountains of eastern Afghanistan. He was just one soldier out of 30, but seemed to have a knack for putting words to the things that no one else really wanted to talk about. I came to think of O'Byrne as a stand-in for the entire platoon, a way to understand a group of men who I don't think entirely understood themselves. One valley to the north, two platoons from Chosen Company accumulated a casualty rate of around 80% during their deployment. Battle Company wasn't hit that hard, but they were hit hard enough. This morning I'm going to interview Justin Kalenitz, one of the wounded from Chosen, and O'Byrne has asked if he could join me. It's a cold, sunny day with little traffic and a north wind that rocks the car along the open stretches and on the bridges. We barrel southward through the industrial dross of New Jersey and Pennsylvania, talking about the deployment and the platoon and how strange it is, in some ways for both of us, to find ourselves in the United States for good. I spent the year visiting O'Byrne's platoon in the Korangal, but now that's over and neither of us will ever see it again. We're both dreaming about it at night, though. Weird, illogical combat sequences that don't always end badly but are soaked in dread. Kalenitz was shot in the pelvis during what has come to be known as the Bella ambush. Bella was one of the fire bases operated by Chosen Company in the Wagal Valley. In early November, 14 Chosen soldiers, 12 Afghan soldiers, a Marine, and an Afghan interpreter walked to the nearby village of Aranas, met with elders, and then started to walk back. It was a setup. The enemy had built sandbag positions in a 360-degree circle around a portion of the trail where there was no cover and the only escape was to jump off a cliff. By some miracle, Chosen held them off. 6 Americans and 8 Afghans were killed and everyone else was wounded. An American patrol hasn't taken 100% casualties in a firefight since Vietnam. We turn into Walter Reed Army Medical Center and park in front of Abrams Hall, where Kalenitz lives. We find him in his room smoking and watching television in the dark. His blinds are down and cigarette smoke swirls in the slats of light that come through. I ask Kalenitz when was the first moment he realized he was in an ambush, and he says it was when the helmet was shot off his head. Almost immediately, he was hit 3 times in the chest, 2 in the back, and then watched his best friend take a round through the forehead that emptied out the back of his head.